Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher. I was waiting for the wolf howling. Oh, there he is. Yep, that's what I was waiting for. Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about
wolf-centric Bible podcast.
Make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church, Los Angeles, California.
Matt, occasionally this podcast, I'm Zach Paris, by the way, pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado Boulder. Occasionally this podcast stirs up controversy on the internet, Matt, and we've done it again, and it is time for us to weigh in, because I went, as I mentioned several weeks ago, I was headed to the Red Rocks Amphitheater, built by the National Park Service, as we talked about, for a July show for the Avett Brothers. I was pretty excited about it. Went. I have old man things that I can complain about because I'm increasingly becoming an old person, and you have different needs as an old person at a concert than you do as a young person at a concert. But regardless, I sent a Facebook Messenger message because I didn't have everybody's cell phone numbers. I sent it to Ben Adams, number one fan of the podcast, the first number one fan of the podcast, Ben Adams, and to Alex LaChapelle, who's been a guest on the podcast to talk about the Avett Brothers. I didn't have Alex's phone number. And I said something pretty controversial. I said, I think I've got a hot take here. I'm not sure Red Rocks is the right venue for the Avett Brothers.
Oh.
Right?
Tell us why.
Oh, well, here you go, Matt. Okay. There are two things at play here. Number one, if you have the opportunity to go to an Avett Brothers show at Red Rocks, you should go. It is a very fun party. Scott Avett, who just got COVID like the day after we saw them play, and they canceled about 2 weeks of shows, talked about it on stage that it's like a family reunion, and it is, right? It's become like a staple of the summer schedule at Red Rocks is their 3 days early July. They don't get the 4th because Blues Traveler evidently has a history of playing the 4th of July, and they haven't canceled that yet, a la Hacks, though they probably should. Because again, it is the year of our Lord 2022 and not 1997. But that said, right, it's become this big thing, and it's become a big thing for people in the Avett Brother community, right? People come, I noticed it. I told Hannah, I noticed it. I told the folks we went with some friends, that there seem to be a lot more like out of towners at this show than normal, right? Like this isn't just it's my office mate. This isn't just people in the Denver metro, Colorado area who like the Avett Brothers. These are people, like I'm hearing accents I know, I recognize from the South, right? So people make this like big trip out of it and they go to all three shows and they come in and they tailgate and camp and stuff, right? Like it's a giant Avett Brothers family reunion. It is a big party. It is a lot of fun. The people who are there who are super into the Avett Brothers and they're going to sing along to every single song, right? Like they know all the words. And that's the vibe, and it's really fun, and you should do that. But Matt, at some point, you got to talk about the music. And I'm here to talk about the music, Matt. I love the Avett Brothers. You know, they're just a couple years older than me from a small town that my small town played in high school football. And what makes the Avett Brothers great are the harmonies, right? I think that's the heart of what makes them really great. At first, there was some novelty to the Avett Brothers, right? They were doing pop songs with a strange, novel instrumentation, right? With banjo and cello, right? Like wasn't a lot of that going on in the pop music scene, right? But it is, it's pop, right? There's nothing wrong. Pop's not a dirty word, man. I think we've established that clearly here. Okay, like there are some who might say, you know, it's not pop. It's folk, Americana, indie, rock stuff, right? But it was a novel thing. They created their own kind of like deal, right? But what made the songs great were the harmonies, in particular the harmonies with Scott and Seth, right? Bob sometimes, though Bob rarely sings. He did sing the other night. It was great. They like gave him a song. Anyway, Bob the bassist. cousin of Bob the Builder. And here's the problem. I think you want to hear those harmonies. Those harmonies would be at their best in a small, intimate venue, like small theater. I want small, enclosed space because you don't get quiet at Red Rocks. You rarely ever get quiet at Red Rocks, right? Like there's always a murmur going on, you know? And at times I found the murmur distracting. And maybe that's what I was fussy about. We did go to the opening night of the Three Night Stand. I don't know. The vibe was weird at the beginning. Like, it wasn't, I was like, they were trying to do an intimate like song. They were, you know, they're pros. They got the playlist laid out well, and they had an early song that was, had the small intimate harmonious vibe. And there was like a lot of murmur, and I found the murmur distracting. I couldn't hear it very well. And it was outdoors. That's the other thing too, right? Like, Red Rocks mm-hmm. is gorgeous. You should always go. But it was windy early on, and they were catching a ton of wind on the mics, and like, you know, that's not the purest. I'm not saying it's not fun. Don't go. It's a bad show. I'm just saying it's not the perfect Avett Brothers venue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that. Do you just want to listen to a record at home in your pristine?
All I really want to do is a la Portlandia. I want to put on the drone hat and have them pipe in my own audio. Just tell me which song to play on the record, and I'll watch it. And I'll sit down in my basement next to my 1964 Westinghouse record player and listen to the pure harmonies.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear that. I hear that. Have you ever seen them play in a smaller?
I've not.
Oh.
I think I've only seen them play Red Rocks.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw them in North Carolina. Like, they were on the come up right as we were getting out of North Carolina going to Chicago.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Sometimes I think I have, but I'm pretty sure those were Yonder Mountain string band shows that I saw like in Asheville at the Orange Peel.
Yeah.
Which is probably, the Orange Peel would be a really fun Avett show, but they're too big. Yeah. That's the trouble, I think, right? Like, when's the last time U2 played a small theater?
Yeah, they do it like a one-off thing, but nobody can ever get tickets to those, you know?
Right. Not that the Avett Brothers are exactly U2, right? But they have like surpassed the economics for them don't work out, or for the faint, you know, like Avett Brothers play the Fox Theater in Boulder. Tickets are going to be insane. How do you get them? You know,
right.
It's a real, real problem.
Yeah. 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 No, I hear that. Yeah. Different. I felt that way when I saw, this is my humble brag. I saw REM. in Chicago and the United States. I think it was probably their last tour, you know. But I was like, man, I'm so glad to be seeing REM, but it's like, this is the wrong venue. Like, I actually think this would be much better and like a much smaller, and I like big arena shows. Like, I see a lot of space in you too. I'm totally into it. There's a way to do it well. But I was like, this band, at least right now, at this stage of their career, like this should be a smaller venue, and I think it would be much nicer. Like, you know?
For REM, towards the end, it got really difficult, I think, because of how different the fan bases were. Because they retained the kind of like arena stadium size fan base in Europe in particular. Versus in the US, they like, that sounds like late stage REM, right? Like, Ben dropped the mic on us in the chat. He said, quote, "My hot take is that any venue on the planet is too small for the Avetts."
Wow. Wow.
That's a tough one. You know, like it is, right? Like is the venue too big or small for the music versus is the venue too big or small for the crowd, you know, for the people? And who own, like, we quickly bleed into like art, like, and even into preaching, right? We can tie it back around, right? Like, who does the sermon? I have a weird thing, Matt. So like, here's how the mechanics work, right? Like, so I'm on the road, like almost every Sunday preaching in random churches, not that random anymore, but like in different churches, right? So I show up, I write my sermon, put the sermon on the, cause I'm a manuscript preacher, Matt, cause that's the best and only way to preach. Just kidding. But I am a manuscript person. And so I put my manuscript up on the, in the pulpit, do the church thing, go up, preach, come back to do my thing, preside. And then traditionally, Matt, in many congregations, you process out, right? So that manuscript is up on the pulpit. So do you go back for it? Do you just leave it? Like, what? Because when I'm leaving, I've got a lot of like I need to get my ob and like stole, make sure, right? Like, it's not like, not like playing a home game. Every game's an away game, you know, of,
sure.
I can't just like, oh, I'll handle that on Monday or Tuesday or whatever. Right. Like, I won't be here again for months.
I mean, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not at a lot of away games, so it's hard to, you know, it's like, it's funeral stuff, but then I've got like a couple, I've got like an extra book with me and stuff. I've got my little, so there's enough that it's worth going back and getting it. Or I just hold it. I just hold this little staff while I'm greeting folks. You're not preaching from the iPad yet? I started preaching from the iPad. I kind of like it. I mean, laptop versus, I don't know. I guess you could probably still get away with it, but it's a little more distracting because you got the, you know, it's like you got the clamshell going on. You got all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
iPad's just like, it's like another form of paper. I feel like you can, it doesn't actually take up that much. You actually can't tell, I think, unless you're really watching. I don't know. It's different, Zach. It's a different thing.
I mean, I'm not judgy on it, right? Like, I'm not judgy on it at all. I don't like, you know, if it works for you, that's great. I don't have an iPad, number one, because one time I dropped a decorative
hammer on it. A decorative hammer. That's right.
So it's not an option for me, but even if it was, I think I'd stay paper because, again, I'm on the road. I'm playing the away game all the time, right? And, like, I don't have a back. Like, there's not a, like, oh, it's not working. I'll go print it off real quick. Like, I got to come in ready to go. And I know I've got my 5 sheets of paper.
5 sheets. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we talked about this on the podcast before. It's 5 sheets, but it's 14.5 with 1.1 spacing and 1.75 inch margins on the bottom. So
to bring it back around, do we think like, have you ever heard of Preacher where you're like, you know what? I don't think this is the right venue.
This venue is a little big for me.
You know what? I like this guy, but I don't think it's the right venue for him.
You know, harmonies are a big part of my preaching style. Oh gosh. It's about the question. It does tie together and then we'll move on that. It's about who owns the sermon, right? Who owns the art, right? Who does it belong to, right? And our friend John Green, the author, right, talks very explicitly about how as soon as you finish writing the book as an author, it no longer belongs to you, and you don't get to control what it means to people and stuff, right? Like, it's not right. The Fault in Our Stars is about that, right? That whole idea, like that's the other idea of it, right? Not just about the pain, but they go to talk to the author because they want to know what happens afterwards. And the author gives them really unsatisfying answers in Amsterdam because it's not up to the author anymore. So there you go. Is it right? What does it matter? Is it about the music or is it about the experience? These philosophical, esoteric questions that are always at the front of our minds while preaching. clearly, we've answered them all. That is my tip, Matt. Pragmatic tip of the day segment. Make your bottom margins on the paper bigger than the top because it pushes the words further up on the page and you don't have to look down so far and you can maintain more eye contact.
You don't have to look down like 3 centimeters.
Yeah, it's effective. It works.
Amazing. Good tip.
Good tip. Because I'm always like, I don't know. What if somebody comes up here and takes the sermon and then publishes it and like, I don't know. I don't actually think that anymore, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely worried about that. No one's taking my sermons. Nobody.
They want to publish it and make money off of it.
Oh, wow. Well, we got some text, Zach. We got some text.
Text. Some people say text is where the sermon begins. Others don't, but some people do.
Some people do. Wow, Ecclesiastes. Oh, love Ecclesiastes.
I wonder what songs we should put on the playlist this week. This text, Matt, before we get into it, is perhaps the easiest song to make a reading to make a playlist for.
Really?
Immediately you knock out two, right? You got Carly Simon and the Birds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The 60s pop stars love it, huh? 60s mm-hmm. and 70s. Yeah. It makes me think of another one. Now I'm adding songs. You got let me just read the text. We're going to get to the songs. Ecclesiastes 1, 2, 12 to 14. I wonder what they're cutting out here. I don't know.
This is a hibachi version of the lectionary here. It is sliced and diced.
18 to 23. Vanity of vanities, says the teacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Okay, the helicopter's outside. The teacher, when king over Israel in Jerusalem, applied my mind to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to human beings to be busy with. I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and see, all is a vanity and a chasing after wind. I hated all my toil in which I toiled under the sun. Oh, this guy must have just turned 40. Seeing what I must leave it to those that come after me, and who knows whether they will be wise or foolish, yet they will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned and gave up my heart to despair concerning all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes one who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave all to be enjoyed by another who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What do mortals get from all the toil and strain with which they toil under the sun? For all their days are full of pain, and their work is a vexation. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This also is vanity. Word of God, word of life.
I believe that's subtweet of God. Subtweet of life. They're coming for us, man.
Oh.
I feel targeted by this.
Usually I say that, and it's ironic. I go, man, what are we going to do with this? But I like this text, Zach. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. What are you going to say? Yeah. It's true.
What are you going to say? It's true. That's exactly right. Like, that is, as our podcast moves to the concerns of middle-aged men, in these years, this is it. I think this is how we feel, man.
I mean, I've been on a, it's just amazing reading it aloud, because I've been on a journey with this passage. When I was a young adult, I was like, oh, this is great. This is definitely some like heavy metal stuff here in the midst of the Bible. I don't know what's going on, but this is pretty great. 60s pop songs. I didn't know this was in here. I didn't know this was in here. All they told you was the Good Samaritan story. They didn't tell you this was here. This Prodigal is great. Son. Good stuff. So I loved it as a young adult. And then, you know, forgot about it for a little while. And now, as a middle-aged person, I come back to it, I go, yeah, preach. Preach Kahalith there, you know?
Yeah, I think I said this the other day.
I think I said this the other day. I really like, you know, Eugene Peterson, Take Him or Leave Him. He's got some good stuff, some bad stuff. But I like, instead of vanities, he just says smoke, nothing but smoke. Mm-hmm. It's all just smoke. Dust.
The etymology of vanity is breath or vapor, according to the sources I was digging to.
Yeah. Yep. See, he goes back to the original. Sometimes he gets it right, I think. I think that's better than vanity. But yeah, you got so breath or vapor, that's what we're going to do with vanity.
Yeah, I mean, right, and it's breath and vapor are in there as vanity, but then you get, you know, it's all, so to retranslate that into verse 14 in the first chapter, because this reading does traverse multiple chapters, though it's very short, all is breath and a chasing after breath, because that's ruach, which is breath, spirit. And, you know, I mean, there's something really provocative, like vanity. I think we immediately go to the Carly Simon version of vanity, which is not an incorrect definition. It's fair. That's a part of it. But I think this is a little different than that, that it is the vanity as not, I don't know. I mean, I don't think this is the right word, but I usually hear and read into vanity, like something of vindictiveness, in the Carly Simon song, right? Like, or self-absorbed, like being self-absorbed and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what this is. There's an emptiness to this that I think is trying to be proclaimed. And that they use a different word for vanity than they do for wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if vanity is this if it's smoke, as Eugene says, or vapor, right? It's a different thing than ruach, wind, which gets translated as the Holy Spirit, which carries.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
A nothingness to it, right?
Yeah.
This pushes us pretty quickly to the void, I think, you know.
Yeah. The void. The Common English Bible, another newer translation, translates it simply as perfectly pointless.
Yeah.
Perfectly pointless, says the teacher. Perfectly pointless. Everything is pointless. It's really fun to see these different translations because you could do a lot with that word, it sounds like.
And I think, So, Matt, I do want to acknowledge at this point that as a person who's not a big believer in the Enneagram, we are both fours here. And this is our jam. Okay. Right. Like, it's okay for us to say like, oh yeah, this takes me to the feels.
It's a four. Yeah.
Makes me feel so much. This must be incredibly meaningful. That may not be true for everyone. It's hard for us to fathom how you wouldn't read this and think, wow, meaning, and just be filled with life from just the pure heaviness of the text.
Yeah.
Some people might hear this as a bit of a bummer and buzzkill.
Yeah. That's good. It's a good point. It's a good point, Zach. It's a good
point. But if you're looking for ways to connect things, right, for people, and, you know, and there are plenty of times in which we're reading these texts, Matt, and I got to do a lot of work to explain to you, to our listeners, how sheep work, how agrarian society functioned, to explain honor shame culture. But here, I think there's a deep connection, right? At least if you talk to the people that I talk to, even at night, their minds do not rest. And at least among the younger folk that I am connected to and myself, that's like real. That's a pretty common issue, right? Like people having difficulty sleeping because their anxious brains continue spinning.
Yeah.
This speaks directly to it. And from there, I think you can make the move to some, that sets the stage for some good news.
Some rest. Like you're going to circle into that.
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a movement into freedom is what's coming here.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's not a lot of good news like built into the text explicitly here, right? But it is there, right? Because like if all the things that you're turning over in your head over and over for hours every night, if they are nothing, well, that's freedom and release and rest. And there's a different world here among you.
Yeah. I think too, like, I mean, it's a good reminder that not everyone will love this on a first hearing. Preaching to the choir, but sometimes you do have to get some truth before you get to the good news. And it like helps you. I find it really clarifying, right? It's like a cold shower or something where it's like, and then you can get there, but you gotta go here first. I think it's going to tie back around because these are complementary texts, right? And I think when we get to the to the gospel, I think this sense is going to tie around. But I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. We're in a planning meeting, and they were talking about trying to build something sustainable that would last. And I was like, actually, no. Like, I was like, that's a really great dream. But I'm kind of at a point in my life where I just think this is all sandcastles. and I really didn't mean to just be like mean, but I was also just being like, no, like I actually think like this is all like you actually can't guarantee the permanence of any of this stuff. So, and I do think that's where the gospel's going to go too, right? Where like he tries to like create some sense of permanence and it doesn't work. So I say that like that I wonder if we can recognize that it's vapor, that it's sandcastles, that there's something temporary about all this. You kind of get to this moment in Ecclesiastes, but that might not be the end. Like he might be wrong, like the author of Ecclesiastes might be wrong that it's pointless. Like it might be all temporary and it might be all wind, but that might not mean that it's pointless. You know, like he could be wrong. It might be an untrustworthy narrator. He might have something right, something's wrong, you know.
But I think it's important to hear what's not said here.
Right. Yeah.
Because if this sounds like a bummer, I think I've got a bigger bummer way of
right? Yeah.
Where like your work is the only thing that matters. It's going to last forever.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and we've talked about it, was it yeah. a couple years ago, you know, with Adam White in particular of for those of us working in campus ministry and with young adults, like our vocational theology that we've developed as the church has been in response to a theology that says money is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've reacted to that. And so now we say that your work should be really meaningful.
Yeah.
And that's not what this text says, right?
Right.
Like it says your work will wash away, you know, with the sands and it has no meaning. So then the question for all of us, but particularly for young adults, right? How do you discern vocation with this Ecclesiastes text as the background, knowing that your work isn't, your work is vanity.
Right. Yeah. Cause you can imagine this author like saying these things and then just being so in despair that he just goes and sits by himself on the beach and just sits there in despair. Right. And maybe you spend a moment there, but then what does it mean to realize this is truth, and then get back up and go, yeah, I know it's all kind of pointless, but we're going to dive back in anyway. And what is that? Like, how does that change the way that you approach it? And I think that's going to relate to the gospel too, but like, how does that change you might still do the same things that you were doing before, but the way you think about it might be different.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. We could just spend the whole time talking about Ecclesiastes.
We could. Let's bounce through Colossians, Matt, because there's such
a
tight connection between the Luke and the Ecclesiastes here. We're continuing to move on in Colossians. If you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on the things that are on earth. I don't love this dichotomous sort of understanding of things where God lives up top and we live down below, and the things up top are really important and the things below are not so important. I don't think that's the only way you can read this, but I think that's the easiest way to read it, with Ecclesiastes coming first. Put to death, therefore, whatever in you is earthly: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is the connecting piece here, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming on those who are disobedient. So no stress. These are the ways you also once followed when you were living that life, but now you must get rid of all such things: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive language from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you've been stripped of the old self with its practices and have clothed yourself with a new self, in that renewal, which is being renewed in knowledge according to the image of its creator. In that renewal, there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all and in all. And I think, Matt, the connection-y piece here is moving towards that like wholeness at the end. That's another complementary piece to the kind of like freedom and new world that that Ecclesiastes text, I think, is trying to push us into.
Yeah.
And that as we're gonna find in the Luke, greed and the accumulation of things, the vain pursuits, are inherently divisive, and that this Colossians text speaks against that division. That division is anathema to the reign of God.
Amen. Good luck to you if you're preaching on Colossians and you've got these other two texts.
Yep. Yeah, that's a choice.
Luke.
Matt, someone in the crowd said to Jesus in a certain place, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." Shades of prodigal son, Matt. But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be judge or arbiter or over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." And then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, what should I do? For I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grains and goods. And I will say to my soul, and I love it when you get this far into speaking in the third person, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. That sounds Ecclesiastes, right? But God had said to him, you fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God. The good news of Jesus.
Woo! What a story. You know, sometimes you read a text and you heard a sermon on it once that is just like, every time you read it, you're going to think of that one sermon. Mm-hmm. And for me, that I was in Seattle, and it was a guest preacher, and it was the Reverend Raphael Warnock, now senator from Georgia.
I've heard of him.
He helped
me get a new album from Jason Isbell.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. This is some 13 years ago, like long before he was running for anything. But he preached a sermon on this text, and it was hilarious, and it was there was good news, and it was wonderful. It's good. It's ripe, I think, for diving into some of what is. I know there's kind of a terrifying ending, but yeah. it's ripe for diving into what's funny about it too, which you pointed out, right? I will say to my soul.
Soul.
This guy's talking to himself. And that right there is yeah. Yeah. So it's everything you need to know about this guy.
Yeah. If you're talking to yourself in the Bible, not a sign that you're on the right side of things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, and it speaks to like, so he doesn't have anyone else to talk to. Right? Who else? It's not like he's sitting in the room going like, you know, what do you think? What do you think, family? What do we think about this? Hey, friend, what do you think? Nope. He doesn't have anyone else to talk to but himself, that's a problem.
Yeah. You need more conversation partners than yourself in life.
you need more. That could be part of your sermon. You need more conversation partners.
Yeah. Bible study by yourself has the same danger, right? Of you like, confirmation bias is real. It's important, Matt, that he is by himself and has no one else to talk to because, as we've mentioned in the podcast a number of times, the economic model at the time, the common understanding of how the economy worked was there was a limited goods economy in the ancient Near East. And that is there were a set amount of riches, of stuff in the world, and they were equally distributed. And anybody taking more than their fair share was stealing from somebody else because they didn't have the capitalistic understanding that the economy could grow and that there could be more stuff, right? So anyone taking more than their fair share was considered particularly shameful because they were stealing from someone else. And so this person, rich man, who's not only just rich and stealing from people, right, but is so rich that he needs to build bigger barns, is inherently evil to the ancient Near Eastern ear in ways that we don't hear, right? That we read like, well, yeah, I've got my retirement plan set up. Where to go? Yeah. We hear this and quickly identify folks who have retirement plans and stuff read and identify pretty quickly and easily, I think, with this man. And so hear it very terrifyingly as why are you wasting your money on saving for retirement?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a couple of weeks ago we had lectionary based family planning. This is your lectionary based financial planning right here. No savings needed.
When away from this sort of financial planning, I think that's when they really lost me. You know?
Yep.
That's when they was thriving for Lutherans and then it was thriving for Christians, and then they were like, we're actually not going to use Luke 12 to build your financial plan. That's when I was like, I'm out. I need a better, more faithful financial organization.
Yeah, when they stopped calling them accounts and started calling them barns, I just felt like, something feels off.
Mm-hmm. The dividing the family inheritance never is a is never lifted up in the gospel as like, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
It normally is the preface for a story that goes wrong.
Right.
You know, like dividing up the family inheritance of the prodigal son is not, doesn't lead to good results. You know, it leads to increased divisiveness and separation. And the gospel speaks pretty strongly against that sort of division and separation.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting in that, right? So another like social science angle is that family units were the primary like building blocks of society at the time, right? Like that, that sort of extended family lived together. They were the only people upon which you could count who had any sort of like social responsibility for your well-being. And a big part of what Jesus comes to do is to break open those things because they're the biggest, like, you know, Robo and Melina talk about the biggest social ill at the time being the sort of like Hatfield-McCoy feuds that would like rise up because you had to protect your family at all costs.
Yeah.
So that was like the big social strife at the time. But Jesus breaking open of these family units is not a breaking open and dividing in half. It's an openness. It's a breaking open that moves towards an increased wholeness, right? Like we're breaking these things open, but we're not going to do that by dividing up the family inheritance. We're just going to open up your family inheritance to, we're broadening your definition of family to include the Samaritan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a move from family to individualism. It's family to like even bigger family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the good news here, I think, Matt, I'll tell a story that I think is okay to tell. We had business majors, you know, in campus ministry, our community goes through like kind of cycles of currently we're engineer heavy, which is its own interesting thing. We're coming off of a time in which we had a ton of music majors, which is its own, they're their own people. And before that we had a lot of business finance people and they're their own people and they really wanted to have a finance night. And so we did it because they were student led.
Right? Use this text.
We didn't use this text. But they're all talking and, it was not the greatest program night we ever had because there were like freshmen there who like, whose primary concern was being connected to other humans that they might like identify with and not like, when do I need to start up a Roth IRA?
Right.
But our finance nerds were like talking about how important it is to start like your IRA stuff while you're an undergrad. And like they're, you know, they're doing the math of like, you start doing it now and you put in $50 a month, like look how much more money you're going to have at 40 than if you start when you're, I don't know, 27, 28. And essentially they're like, you know, if you don't have if you start at a Roth IRA at 28, your like life is ruined. And
yeah.
Megan is there who is 28 and does not have a Roth IRA. And it's essentially like crying on the floor. She's not really crying, but like is overwhelmed by like, hearing these people who are studying finance say that her life is ruined because she doesn't have a Roth IRA at 28. I think there's some good news in here for Megan. For that Megan, you know, that Roth IRAs are in a real sense vanity. Life, of course, is more complicated and nuanced than the clarity that because that's what we like about it, right? The Ecclesiastes is really clear. Oh, everything you're doing is meaningless. Well, maybe it's not the clarity. Maybe it's how that clarity like moves us so quickly into the shades of gray. Because you said, turns out the meaningless stuff was meaningful earlier on, I think.
Well, I didn't go that far. But I just would say it's not necessarily pointless, which I guess is just a way to say it. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not worth doing, you know?
But it like immediately plunges us. We go to that, like it moves us so quickly to a place of certainty, but from there we move very quickly into like shades of gray of you know, we don't just go sit on the beach and wait for things to end. We do practical things, right? Like I'm not I appropriately I think feel convicted about the barns that I'm building online with Fidelity Net Benefits. But I continue to contribute to them every month.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I like, yeah. How radical shall we go? I mean, yeah. I guess I feel like, yeah, both of these texts speak to very real experiences that we might have, whether it's it's the Ecclesiastes 6 or just the anxiety, I think. I mean, you pointed out in that Ecclesiastes 6 where they can't rest because of the anxiety. And here in Luke, it's like, you want to make sure you have enough stuff, you know? And we do we do think about that, like, especially in this time of like economic craziness. So that's very real. And yet it's also true that like you will never find what if you try to get it through your work, you're never going to find what you need, because Ecclesiastes points out why. If you're just trying to like have enough grain, turns out it's never going to be enough. Like, it's never going to be enough for you to be able to turn off that little switch in your brain. Like, yeah, you should probably be prudent and everything, but like, it's never going to be enough where like it satisfies you and you feel like, you know, and so where do you put, yeah, it's, I think there's both a sense that like, you don't have to do all of these things to earn your rest, right? I preached a sermon a couple weeks ago. Oh no, this past Sunday, as we're recording this, and Mary and Martha, and zeroed in on that, on rest, right? And like,
yeah,
in the midst of rest is when you realize your belovedness. And so, like, I feel like that's got to be part of the good news, is that freedom, that release from not being able to sleep. And at the same time, I might also point to the fact that this man has nothing to talk to. And I do, and has no one to talk to. And I think that, I do think it's like, yeah, you also realize like those things that like having a strong community network is actually more important than you like individually, like having all your stuff. And maybe that's where Colossians comes back into the mix, mm-hmm. where some of the things that, that the other Colossians are talking about are like inner, like the ways that we treat each other. And yeah. that at the end of the day, like, the community, the networks of relationship that we build, that ultimately is like, not ultimately, but that is more important than some of these other things. And that's what God, I think, is inviting us into, right? Where we say Christ is all in all, that is part of what God invites us into. I don't know if I got anywhere, but that's where I'm.
Yeah.
That's
right. I mean, I think that it's important to lift up that this isn't like, even before he gets condemned, like the description of the good news of the rich man is not great news, right? It's
yeah.
I'll pull down my barns, right? Like, he has so much stuff, right? He doesn't have enough places to put them. I'm going to pull down my barns. I'm going to build larger ones, and there I'll store all my grains. And then I will say, soul, you have ample goods. Relax, eat, drink, and be married. It's not, yeah. And I will say, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to wait until I get to the, I can't relax, eat, and drink, and be merry yet. I've got to push that further down the road. Whereas the good news of, you know, especially Ecclesiastes, right? Is eat, drink, and be merry now. Like, that's,
yeah.
You have permission. Like, that's, it's not, that sort of fullness and fulfillment is not a thing that is down the road. It's here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
There you go. We got all your lectionary-based financial planning. That's what we should pivot to, Matt. After we've gone through the lectionary like 5 times, we should pivot to like a Dave Ramsey-esque parody podcast where we give biblical-based
yes.
financial planning.
Let's do it. Well, what are we listening to while we make our financial plans?
Well, Matt, you know, I've already given you some, but I'm not going to play them because I felt like they're too obvious. And, you know, we do try to like think through what the other person might be picking so we don't, you know, end up with just 3 songs. So I found some different ones. I found Waiting in Vain by Bob Marley and the Wailers, which is a nice one. Waiting in Vain for Your Love is a good one. You should take a listen to that one. That was new to me. Divide by Odessa is pretty good. Kind of a love song. And so I like it. And then You Fool, The Fool on the Hill, man, by the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour, I believe is where it come from.
Okay, nice. Good stuff. Well, I'll do my favorite Ecclesiastes song, John Mellencamp, Paper and Fire. Paper and Fire. Mm. It's all Ecclesiastes. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Like, and the song, everything just burns up like paper and fire. And it references this text from Ecclesiastes and tells these little vignettes. But the song itself, like the music, sounds like something catching fire. Like, it's so good. It kicks off what I think is Mellencamp's best album, The Lonesome Jubilee. I know many folks will say it's Scarecrow. That is a classic. But
many
I think
folks will say it's Scarecrow. Yeah.
I think it's his follow-up to Scarecrow, which is The Lonesome Jubilee, which is just a fantastic name for an album. Someday I'm going to find it on vinyl. I'm going to do it. Anyway, Paper and Fire, John Mellencamp. Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. Zach, I'm on a streak of putting Dave Matthews songs on the playlist.
Thought you might do it.
You got to go Trippin' Billy's, right? You got to do it. Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. You got it on there? Yep.
I'd already written it down. If you weren't going to do it, I was going to do it.
Yeah, it's the R. Adam Burnt, Dave Matthews song in the
song
playlist.
Song of the week.
Song of the week. And then, I needed a Division song too. So started looking up some Joy Division. Because Joy Division shows up in my cocktail drinks and vinyl records book. Which then got me into Joy Division. It was like a gateway to get me into Joy Division. Love Will Tear Us Apart. Love
will tear us apart. It will tear us apart.
By Joy Division. Yeah.
Good
the
songs.
Joy Division is like they're pretty moody. And then the drink they recommend is the Dark and Stormy, which is just like as a four. I just love everything about putting out some Joy Division and having a Dark and Stormy. It's great. Love it.
Oh goodness, man. Well, what a playlist.
What a playlist. It's been real.
Real vinyl.